All right, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. I'm thinking, I'm hearing something. What is it? Yep, that's right. That is the sound of Hillary Clinton's campaign. I am telling you, well, let's talk numbers. The latest Rasmussen Reports polling came out last week. 44 to 37%, Hillary is sinking like a stone. And I'll tell you exactly why. I have heard from so many conservatives who have said, oh, I'm no Trump fan. But after that despicable outcome and of the whole email investigation, after Bill's obvious meddling in his meeting with Loretta Lynch at the tarmac and Phoenix, and we talked about this last week, after all this stuff and her just absolute tone-deaf lies, people say, no, it can't happen, it won't happen. And ironically, it's been profoundly unifying. And I've said this all along. I've said this from the beginning. People would say, well, Sam, what do you think? You think she's going to get indicted? And I say, well, no, she's not. And I really hope she doesn't. Because I want her in the race. And I want her in the race because she's such a wounded candidate. And this proves just how mortally wounded she is. Now, she's not just mortally wounded among Republicans who were anti-Trump and now are coming around to the whole concept of supporting Trump because they just can't have Hillary in office. No way, no how. But we also have this whole love-in last week of Bernie endorsing Hillary Clinton. Now, before we get to the clips of it, I was watching it in real time and I ended up having to put it on mute because I don't know if you feel the same way. I just can't listen to Hillary Clinton. Her voice sounds like somebody grating a golf ball with a cheese grater. It's terrible. Yes, yes, yes. If you have an ex-wife, you know exactly. I mean, I'm telling you, it's terrible. She's not a pleasant person to listen to. I'm not even getting into the substance of it. I'm just telling you, her voice is shrill. Even when she's trying to be sweet, God knows what her and Bill are up to, but I can't imagine. So Bernie fans are beyond themselves. If you know a Bernie Sanders supporter, you've got to ask them what they think about Bernie giving his, and it was a full-throated endorsement of Hillary. And Bernie got up there and basically sold out. Boom. And I'm telling you, the sentiment out there among Bernie supporters was anti-establishment, anti-big business, okay? That sentiment, his support, and people who get too full of themselves assume that their support comes from a cult of personality. And I don't blame Bernie. I really don't. I mean, if there ever was a personality cult, it was this feel the burn and outlines of his face. And I mean, not since Obama. You know, the preoccupation with the man rather than the message dominated the political landscape. But listen, these people are jumping off the Bernie bandwagon like fleas off of a dog as it's getting a flea dip. They are leaping off of him. And it's going to be interesting to see where they fall. I predict, and hear me out here, When the exit polling comes back in November from the general election, there will be defectors who previously supported Bernie who will have gone to the Trump camp. And they're not necessarily going to reflect in the polling leading up to the election because these are people who would not want to ever go on the record as supporting Trump. And if you are a Bernie supporter, if you are somebody who refuses to peel off their Feel the Burn sticker off your Audi or Tesla or whatever whatever car you have that was designed and built and provided to you by evil corporations, there is an element of truth to what I'm saying. I think you can admit it. Well, all right. Let's talk in November. You know, Bernie fans are so upset that they are still gonna protest at the convention, at the Democratic convention. Did you hear about this latest protest? You might not even believe this. Apparently, there is going to be an organized fart-in. Generally speaking, I thought it was a fart out. I don't know what a fart in feels like, but I don't know. Well, you know who the father of the fart in is? And I'm not even making, this isn't even a joke, people. This is for reals. Saul Alinsky. This would be none other than Obama's political mentor. Saul Alinsky. A famous left-wing agitator is the father of the fart-in. Now, my understanding is that when it's time to vote for Hillary at the convention, you know, really it's just a procedural vote because she's got all the delegates, so everybody goes aye, you know, vote, and the ayes have it. Especially if Villaraigosa is the one monitoring the vote. But yes, so at that moment, collectively, all the Bernie Sanders who have signed up for this protest will let out farts in unison. So I'm picturing this is something like out of a Minions movie, okay? This is very Minion-ish. They're serious about this. I know. They're stocking up on beans. The organizer of the fart-in, Cherie Honkala, and now she's some national coordinator for the PPEHR, Poor People's Economic Human Rights. The hell is that? We'll call it PEAR. Expects more beans to pour into her group's downtown Philadelphia office. In fact, boxes of dry beans and heavy containers of canned beans have already arrived by mail. Honkala says beans in all varieties, navy, pinto, lima, and baked, with return addresses in Texas, Wisconsin, and across the Rust Belt. Notice, I don't know if anyone's paid for these beans. These are free beans just falling from the sky. Actually, very, very much similar to Bernie's economic plan for America. And apparently this is what's going to happen. They're just going to prepare all the beans, and then the night before the event, they're going to consume the beans. My dad would always say, so we ate a lot of beans as kids. You know, it's good cheap food. And so there's that little rhyme, and I think my dad changed it up a little bit when we were kids. He would say, cooking beans, the greatest art. The better the cook, the better the... Yeah. And then he'd make a face. So, I hope they've got some good cooks. Because, I tell you, I don't know how many people she anticipates will do this. I'm telling you, I wouldn't want to be there when they do. Can you imagine what a whole bunch of Bernie supporters holding in their farts are going to be like? Oh, boy, this is so good. Oh, my goodness. People are not quite sure which delegates are going to join the fart in, but no delegates want to go on the record because they're worried that their credentials are going to get revoked. I think that counts as chemical warfare. Especially with those pinto beans. Aren't they the worst, or is it lima beans? Which ones are supposed to be the most potent? I don't know. So, all right. We've got it. So the numbers, you know, Hillary's sinking campaign. She's facing Trump up by, what is it, seven points. And this is some dinky poll. It's the Rasmussen poll. And it's the trend. You know, it goes too with the trend. So when you look at the average, the polling averages are now trending toward a separation with Trump in the lead. Not good. And it is a direct result of Hillary getting off on this whole, not getting indicted. She got a pass. She obviously violated the law. And people don't like that because we are a law and order society. The other thing is, and I'm telling you this, at every turn, Obama and Hillary choose what is politically expedient. They choose political expediency. And we talked about it last show. Please get, if you haven't, download the podcast because we talked about how the whole Black Lives Matter thing is nonsense. It's total nonsense. The narrative is BS. And Obama and Hillary were the first to get up and condemn these things and just racist. And what did Trump do? He gets up and he says, I am the law and order candidate. And isn't it funny that he says that right after Hillary gets off from violating some very serious laws? So when we come back, let's get into, well, I got a few more numbers for you. And then I want to get into the Loretta Lynch testimony because this is where it all began to unravel for Hillary. Oh, boy, this is fun. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
This is Attorney James Bergener. I get the best news and information for the week from Sam Nation every weekend on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
All right, we're back. Okay, so you think I'm getting a lot of flack for calling Hillary making fun of her voice. Come on. All right, we just pulled out some clips because you know what? I think what you have to do if you make an assertion, you got to back it up with evidence. All right, we threw these at the end. I think this is clip 19, and then, well, let's do clip 19. Now, this is, to give you background, this is at the rally. This is Hillary getting endorsed by Bernie. Is that where it's from? Where is this from? Okay, so this is actually from a few years back, but anyway, this is angry Hillary.
I am sick and tired of people who say that if you debate and you disagree with this administration, somehow you're not patriotic. And we should stand up and say we are Americans and we have a right to debate and disagree with any administration.
Gosh. Oh. Ugh. My sciatica just acted up. Okay. So now, okay, well now, all right, Sam, well, that's just Hillary, you know, that's her mad as hell and she's not going to take it anymore. Ugh. Now let's, what about Hillary when she's excited? And where is this clip from? What is this? Do we know? It's recent. This is a recent one. Yeah. So now here is her talking during the campaign. Okay. And she's, I think this is right where she's just sealed up the nomination and she's got all buttoned up and now she's the Democratic Party nominee. And okay, by the way, it was a hard fought primary. So this is Hillary Clinton excited and happy and relieved. Play the tape.
What a night! An unbelievable night! What a great campaign for the Democratic Party and for the United States of America!
Oh my God. it's the same tone. And she says United States of America like she hates it. I didn't say that like in the United States of America. Like Putin says it nicer. Oh my gosh. Oh, what a hack. You want to listen to that for 4 years? At least Trump is funny. So, all right. I mean, I know. So there it is. You may draw your own conclusions, but her voice drives me nuts. Loretta Lynch. So she gets everybody now, Comey, Lynch, everybody's getting dragged into the Capitol to testify between to the House Judiciary Committee because they want some answers. And, well, we want some answers, too. We talked about last week how there is just how no other person, I mean, no other rank and file government employee who did what Hillary did would be let off. And there are pundits, there are radio talk show hosts, there are TV personalities, and they are all telling you, no, it's totally different. What Petraeus did was totally different. It's not. Taking secure information, documents, and transmitting it in a non-secure way is the same thing as taking secure documents physically, okay, by email, okay, to an unsecure server. By email is the same thing as transporting those documents physically. It doesn't matter. Like, the Petraeus argument is ridiculous because, you know, the premise is, well, the people that are saying, it's different. That's just what Hillary did. Look, there's no difference than when Petraeus tells his biographer something that's classified, and Hillary transmits top secret information through her server that is unsecured. There's no, it's the same thing. The law should treat the thing as exactly the same because it carries the same risk that secure information that was deemed top secret and for which we have developed very careful and expensive protocols for maintaining its secrecy and confidentiality and protecting it from our enemies and our adversaries, completely now exposed and able to be exploited. Not go back to the show last week, download the podcast, get the whole thing. But what I want to talk about here, Loretta Lynch. What does it mean to be attorney general? What is an attorney general? Well, you're the chief law enforcement officer in the country. You are also, you're also kind of the top lawyer in the country. You've got to be an attorney to be an attorney general. And the attorney, I'm not exactly, it used to be you didn't have to be. I don't know how it is now, but you generally now must be a lawyer to be attorney general. And it's a great position. So you've got, when you're a president selecting an attorney general, you're going to pick one bright person. Now, as we know, historically, that's not always the case. Well, even Bush gave us Alberto Gonzalez, right? Not the brightest tool in the shed. Also, we now have Loretta Lynch. And let's go to her testimony because she just got devastated on Capitol Hill. And let's go to clip number 4, Rob. And this is Dave Trott, a congressman from Michigan. And he's asking about the email server and figuring out, if you didn't charge Hillary here, if you didn't think it was appropriate to charge, if you don't think Hillary broke the law here, tell me what circumstances there would be where the law, where somebody would break the law in a setup like this. Roll the tape.
I asked my staff to count the number of times today you would say I can't answer that question or refuse to give an appropriate response. It's happened 74 times so far.
So 74 times. Give any question that they ask, 74 times she doesn't answer. Now let's go. And here's the one that we want to play here, the Chaffetz one. Go to the clip number 9, Rob.
Do you have any examples of where it's legally acceptable to retain classified information in a non-secure location?
I don't have a hypothetical answer for that.
Yeah. Do you have any examples where it's legal acceptable to retain classified information and in a non-secure location? Any examples of that? Nope. This is the top law enforcement officer in the whole country. This is ostensibly a bright legal mind. And so don't tell me that this is a lack of competence. It's not a lack of competence, or this is, she's not able to answer this question, not because she can't come up with an example because her mind can't go there, but because there's really no example that satisfies the law where you could do it legally. You know, we hear, let me just say this. We hear a lot about selective prosecution of individuals, you know, well, selective prosecution, you know, that it's, they broke a law, but it was the spirit of the law. And this is selective non-prosecution. That's what this Hillary thing was. And the thing that we've got to understand is that this will be, when we look back and do a post-mortem of the ill-fated Hillary Clinton campaign, this will be the turning point. She stays out of jail, but loses the race. And I know. Look, there's a lot of smart money on this. We were just talking about earlier about how there are Republicans now that are so disgusted by what they're seeing. They're disgusted not just by Comey's statement and what Comey's failure to recommend prosecution, but they're disgusted by this testimony. We'll play a few more clips later of Loretta Lynch, just obviously has no defense, has no good arguments for why she ought to, you know, why she shouldn't have prosecuted Hillary. But here's the thing. So many people are reacting to this now, going, look, I can't, I cannot support Trump. I think that's almost the thing. The idea of a Hillary Clinton presidency is just unimaginable. And, well, yeah, you bring that up. You remember Mitch McConnell, who is the virtually mummified member of Republican Senate. He's the Senate Majority Leader. He is the top Republican. I say he's mummified because every time he gets up on doesn't he look? He always looks like he's just barely moving his mouth. And he just talks like this. And this is Mitch McConnell. So Mitch McConnell gets up and he says, I frankly cannot support this candidate. Talking about Trump, I cannot support him. And you know what can I translate it for you? I would rather deal with Hillary Clinton. At least she's not going to challenge my status quo. And that's what it is. And these Republicans like Ryan, I'm going to get into this a little more. When you've got Republicans like Paul Ryan giving these half-assed, mealy-mouthed excuses and just, you know, I can't get behind, and I've met with Trump and da-da-da-da-da-da. And then on the flip side, you have a candidate as flawed and as terrible for our country as Hillary. It takes away from any legitimacy your argument has to do anything but give a full-throated endorsement of your candidate. Because your candidate, while you may think he's flawed, and while you even may have some legitimate reasons to be concerned, you still have to, you lose all your moral authority when you get up and, like McConnell, say, I can't support this candidate, and I'd rather, and he basically does several times. I think we're going to be fine with Hillary in office. Any Republican, any normal thinking person who thinks that Hillary Clinton would be great to have in office I have no words for it. So when we come back, let's talk about some of these guys on the Republican side, and then let's talk some more numbers that I think you're going to be surprised by. I also want to talk about the RNC, okay? We're going. Rob and I will be there, and I want to tell you a little bit of the buzz that's happening before the event. Back after this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
This is Sweet James. I listen to Sam Nation.
Oh my gosh, imagine you're sitting at the Democratic National Convention. You're waiting. You're a Hillary delegate. You are waiting, anticipating, bated breath. Good thing, too, for what's about to come next. You're about to cast your voice, your vote, the first female candidate for president. And all of a sudden, 230 Bernie supporters all let out a giant fart in unison. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's the giant fart in protest. And there you are. You are dying. You are asphyxiating because all those pinto beans that they ate the night before. Ugh, ugh. You begin to cough. You begin to choke and you need to go to the hospital. You know what? You might have a case. And the person to call is Sweet James Bergener. You know, it's not always the clear-cut fact scenario that, you know, it's not just car accidents. It's other stuff, too. You never know. But you know what? Those Bernie supporters, they better take some personal responsibility for what they did to you, don't you think? So, whether it's a car accident, whether you've, been bit by a dog, you trip and fall, product liability issue, anything like that, you got to talk to... James Bergener is a knowledgeable attorney. He knows his stuff inside and out, but most importantly, he's a guy that cares. He's got a big heart, and he fights for every last dollar and every right of his clients. So please, if anybody, you or a loved one, if you need help on a case, call Sweet James Bergener, 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit SweetJames.com. Okay. So, yeah, no, that fart in is real. I still can't believe it. So Robbie and I, we're going to the RNC. We're leaving tonight. We are out. We are headed there and we'll be there by morning. Very excited. So I'm just packing up here, ready to get out of town. What to anticipate? For one, Robbie and I we're going to go to a very exciting party, and I'm pleased to report, Rob, that you're going to be my plus one. So Tuesday night, this is probably what I'm most excited about. There is going to be an LGB Trump party put on by Milo Yiannopoulos, Breitbart, Ann Coulter is speaking, even Geert Wilders, who is the member of parliament in the Netherlands and an outspoken critic of radical Islam. I'm telling you, I think who else is going to that party? Who else is going to be there? I don't know. So there's a great speaking cast. And I can't wait. No, it's going to be fabulous. It's going to be great. I can't wait. Well, you know, Milo's the guy. He's been the big Trump supporter. If you don't know who he is, we've talked about him before on the program. Is his tour still going? His college tour? He calls it the Dangerous Homo Tour. And he's been, I don't know, like 200 college campuses throughout the U.S. He's railing against political correctness, against millennials and their nonsense. And but mostly he's talking about his thing is he's fighting safe spaces on college campuses. And I hope this is going to be a platform. And, you know, now the Republican Party is shaping its platform and you'll be pleased to know. Yeah, well, it'll be really cool. So Mike Pence, you know, that's the news. You know, Mike Pence is on the ticket. And we'll see how that plays out. I think it's too soon to tell, although some of the interviews he's done are quite good. So we'll see how that plays out and what it does for Trump's numbers and what it does for the strategy of it. But I'll tell you, let me give you my first immediate response here before I go back to the RNC. Let me give you my first immediate response here on Pence. I love it. I love that Trump picks a middle-aged white guy. Sam, what do you mean? What do you mean? Well, I'll tell you. I love something about Trump, and I love it profoundly, which is, and I always respected it from the beginning and trusted that he would have success because of it. And it is that Trump really just cares about what he thinks and what his trusted advisors think. And he is not someone that does anything based off of polling or off of what the pundits tell him or focus groups or anything like that. Because every politico I know is coming to me and saying, oh, he needs to pick a woman. He needs a minority. He needs to. Well, really what they're saying is he needs to pander to one of the groups that the people in the know have accepted as being on the outs with Trump. One of these groups that Trump has obviously, manifestly alienated. Women hate Trump. Women, there's no way they're voting for Trump. Latinos, there's no way. Trump, I've had, you know how many people have come to me, and these are people you would know and you would respect if you heard them on TV, and I'm telling you, come to me, he needs to pick a Latino woman. And this is where, look, I mean, if the Latino woman is the right person for the job, I mean, that's fine with it. Great. But why would you ever pick somebody because they represent a minority group? This is so against my thinking in every respect. And so yeah, but these whisperings, I mean, these whisperings are not, these are not just whisperings. There's things that you've heard. You've heard people say this on cable news. You've read this in the New York Times and the Washington Post. So remember what happened when, well, I'll just point out one candidate from Christmas past who gave in to the temptation. That's right. John McCain. Well, Senator McCain, you're an old white guy. What do you, you're an old white guy and you're running against, you got to shake it up. You got to do something big. You got to do something bold. If you want to win, if you want to win against this upstart Obama guy, what do you got to do? You've got to pick somebody. You've got to pick somebody that is just going to change the whole talk of the campaign. Which he did. Because, you know, he picked Palin. And Palin didn't bring, I'm telling you right now, Sarah Palin, I'm not going to dump on Palin, but Palin, the her perceived value was she was a woman. He picked her because she was a woman, and that's it. We had the guy running to be the first black president, and she could have been the first woman VP. That's all he wanted. And it was so obvious that that's what he wanted. And it became obvious when Sarah Palin was just out of her depth. You know, the idea of a vice president, I still remember this, not to digress, but picking a vice president is the most important thing. It signals how serious are you about this job? Are you here to win the election? Or have you actually given serious consideration to who you want next to you and a heartbeat away from the presidency? In fact, I would argue that picking the vice presidential candidate is the first, it's the first decision that you make as wannabe president. Okay? It's the first serious move of your audition for the presidency. And what and who you pick speaks volumes about what kind of a president you're going to make. Picking Joe Biden, oh my God. I mean, that should have been all we needed to know about what a loser Obama was going to be. Seriously. I tell you, why did he pick Biden? He picked Biden because Obama needed to pick an old white guy. He was a young black guy. He needed an old white guy. So he picks a guy who what? Somebody that is non-threatening, who doesn't challenge him, who doesn't outspeak him, outshine him, out anything him. Because we should have known from the beginning that Obama would be the biggest princess ever to prance in the White House. It's true. I still remember, I was in high school, okay? College. I was first year of college, and I was in Europe, and I remember where I was when my dad called me and told me that Bush picked Cheney. And I, at the time, I remember having a big talk with my dad. My dad was ecstatic because he was not a big fan of Bush, but he recognized that Bush picked, Cheney brought zero sex appeal to the ticket. Cheney also comes from Wyoming. I don't think that Bush really needed to, like, tie up Wyoming for him. It was, Wyoming is not a swing state. That's right. Instead, Bush recognized that he's a young guy, he's a governor, and he needs somebody with inside the Beltway Washington experience that was going to be, a wise force in the administration. And it was a good move. It was a good move. Now, you don't have to love Cheney, but I'm telling you, I it was a good move, and it signaled that Bush was serious about governing. So if Trump had picked some candidate if he had picked a minority candidate or a woman candidate for the sake of that, I would have lost so much respect for him. But I recognize from the beginning when I haven't really gotten involved in the sweeps in the Veep stakes leading up to this. So I've been fairly agnostic, but I'll tell you what I thought Trump, what the single most important thing was for Trump to pick, the skill set that he needed, and he satisfied it with Pence, and then some. So, more to come. Back, I've got to talk more about the RNC, because we're going to have some fun. Leaving right after the show, going to Cleveland. Back after this, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
What are you doing this weekend? I'm James Bergener, and I'm listening to Sam Nation right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
So we're talking about the vice presidential pick, and not just about Trump, although I'm going to get to that in a second, but we were talking about what generally a presidential candidate ought to do when he's looking for his vice president. And the idea is, you know, you want to pick somebody that's going to be a great partner in governing. And there's a very different thing about when you're a candidate, you are thinking, even the most principled person is thinking from a place of political expediency, which is to say, what do I need to do to get elected? And most of the decisions that they're making are all about that. It's called a campaign. I mean, there's nothing cynical. It's just that's what it is. When I said that the first decision you really make as a president or as an auditioning president, the first decision you make is your running mate. And it's the first time that we as the public, as the voters, get to see you making a presidential decision, because that is something that while, yes, some candidates historically are more worried about what their running mate brings to the election, to their electability, to their campaign, than what that candidate brings to the table in governing. What does that vice presidential pick bring me now to get elected versus what will this choice in vice president lead to? What will he or she contribute to my administration? That's what it is. So I'm telling you, this is the contribution that these, it's all about what is this person going to contribute? And I talked about Bush and Cheney and how I thought that was a good decision. And here, when it comes to Pence and it comes to Trump, again, Trump, as I said earlier, he's not pandering to any particular group. But what he is doing is he's picking somebody who fills in Trump's own weaknesses. Trump is, by his admission and part of his great, I think, great attractiveness to the voting public, is that he's an outsider. But Washington, let me tell you, in order to clean up Washington, you have to know Washington. And so what he needs is he needs a guy or gal, okay, who's going to be there, who understands how government works. And he needs to, in order to get his legislative agenda done, he needs somebody who has relationships on Capitol Hill, which Pence, as a former congressman, does. Now, also, Pence comes from a swing state, so there's some good, you know, strategics here. And incidentally, you know that Pence was the one who I think almost handed Trump the win in Indiana. Now, hear me out. I'm getting a skeptical look from Rob, but you remember when Pence, he's the one who endorsed, I think, 2 days before the primary. And remember, Indiana was the make or break primary for Trump. I mean, Trump could have won it in the end, but Trump really needed Indiana to seal the deal. And this was just to jog your memory a little bit. This was where the Hoosier state, he didn't know. The Cruz got in there and called it a basketball rink, whatever, rim. He messed up a bunch of sports terminology. But in the end, Cruz, at least on paper, got the prize, which was their popular governor and conservative governor endorsed Cruz. But it was the worst endorsement ever. If you didn't hear it, I mean, it was basically, but Trump is great too. I'm endorsing Cruz, but I really like Trump too. And either of these candidates, I mean, it was terrible. I think it actually hurt Cruz more. So I always laughed. I said, Pence basically handed, it was the last nail in the coffin for Cruz. And that's a bit of fun history there. But I think, I think judging by these interviews and seeing the way Pence is doing, he's a very focused speaker, which is nice because sometimes Trump is prone to a bit of wandering. And Pence is focused. He's also a far more a socially conservative Republican than Trump is. Which, again, you see all these polls that have come out before the announcement where there are a number of conservatives that are laying on the sidelines. Okay, they're not excited about Trump. There are a lot of conservatives don't like Trump. And one of the things that Trump has to do, not has to, but he needs to do in order to ensure a win in November, is to lock up the base. Now, we've gone into why Hillary is helping him do that. And her skating on the whole email thing, I talked about it earlier in the show, her skating on that really has, I think, done more to help Trump lock up his own base than anything else. But it is also helpful to have somebody in his court who has credibility with the base. And you're going to find now, this coming week, more and more, establishment type Republicans, I think, voicing support for a Trump presidency and for his candidacy, certainly. It's going to be very interesting going to the convention. It'll be because we've read over and over again that there are going to be these protests. Now, there's no Fardin, as far as I know. Thank goodness. No Fardin planned for the RNC convention. But there are a lot of Cruz supporters that are going to go and be angry. That's at least what I've been hearing. So it'll be interesting I will come back next week, and I'm really excited because next Saturday at 3, gotta tune in because you'll want to hear it live. I'm gonna take the whole hour and go through everything that happened and kind of my first hand impressions of what transpired. Because you're probably not gonna hear it in the media. You're going to tune in and watch cable news and get somebody else's opinion of what happened that's not even there. And what I suspect is this whole Cruz thing's going to fizzle. And I don't see it really going. And I think the pledged delegates are going to do exactly what they said they're going to do. And this is why. Don't be mistaken. There's the strategy behind it. There's a reason why Trump leaked it, this Pence decision, on Friday or Thursday, I think. Why he made the decision Friday, why this is all happening before and days before the convention. So, this is done purposely with the intent and objective to start to erode any kind of pent up, you know, fissure that might be happening with these disgruntled Cruz delegates. And my prediction is there will be more disgruntled Bernie delegates at the DNC convention than there are disgruntled Cruz delegates at the Republican convention. Because how disgruntled can you really be when the guy that endorsed your candidate, who was the last stand, he was the Alamo of your candidate's campaign, and he's on the ticket? Are you really? Are you going to vote again? I think that when we look back at this, there's one thing you can't take away from Trump, and he's got great instincts. I'm telling you, not since Bill Clinton has there been somebody with so much great independent political instinct. Because at every turn in this campaign, he's made excellent, big picture decisions have all been excellent. And now I've read, you saw they're drafting this last week, they've drafted the platform, or they're putting together the platform. And the wall made it. The wall, building the wall on the southern border, has made it into the platform. And you know, and again, this is exactly where you see the disconnect between the Republican establishment and you and I. Because you and I are frustrated to bits about illegal immigration. When you see one of those little videos of people crawling against this tin thing that they put up in the middle of the desert, and you see it, you know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking because I'm thinking the same thing. I see it and I go, this is a joke. I feel sorry. Yes, I feel sorry and a certain amount of compassion for the person climbing up again, around off that wall. But they're breaking the law. And then we see our government and we get it. Obama, he wants illegals here. He wants a lot of illegal immigrants because they're boosting his party and that's his platform. And he basically said that that's what he's going to do. But we feel so stabbed in the back when Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney, Mitch McConnell, and all these losers from the establishment violate our trust. We give them our votes. They go to Washington, or in some cases, thank goodness, don't, and then do exactly what the Democrats are doing and have been doing for years. And so finally, you're seeing for the first time your frustrations that you poured out. You went to vote in the primary. Your candidate won. Your ideas prevailed. And now they're being put in the platform of the Republican Party. It's great. You know, this is the kind of change I can believe in. This is what democracy is all about. It's incredible. And we are blessed and so fortunate to live in this great country. I will see you here next Saturday, 3 p.m. I can hardly wait to report back to you on what this whole week was all about. And I'm out of here. I got a plane to catch. Miss you guys already. We'll be on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. We're going to give you the live stream of everything going on. SamNation.com. Get all of our stuff there. See you soon. Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.